This is episode 130. Did I look at it right? 139 of the Mile
episode
High Show.
139.
Yeah.
Crushing it, man.
We're getting to where we're in triple digits. That ain't bad.
Yeah, no.
I had something saved. As you can tell, there's no structure on this show.
Oh, no. I love the free form.
139, we're at Far From Folsom out in the patio, and I am sitting with Kyler Austin, who is a new acquaintance of mine. Thanks for making time, Kyler.
Thank you, Matt, for having me on the show.
I think the first question is, why isn't it Tyler? Where'd you get Kyler?
It isn't Tyler because, from the story I've heard, when my mom was pregnant with me, she had watched there was a show called American Gladiators. They kind of had it reinstated after some time, but in the early 90s, I guess it was a big show, and one of the gladiator names was Kyler, and she found that very interesting. And so when I was born, that just happened to be the name. So, I guess Kyler is just American Warrior at this point, reinvented.
American Warrior, Video Warrior now.
Yeah, Video Warrior.
I met you, what it's been, a couple months back at an event at the Prescott Resort.
Yep.
You were there doing some video work with alongside Ted Leonard.
Ted Leonard, that's
Prescott
correct.
Prescott Pro Sounds, yep. Who has also been a guest on this show.
Right.
We're going to try not to get blown away out here on the patio. He's making me very uncomfortable, Kyler, is because he's got a camera pointed in this general direction, and I'm not a big fan of being on. So hopefully it's just getting him.
Yeah.
But you were doing some work there. I think it was not the Half Century Club. It was
it was Teacher of the Year?
Yeah, the Teacher of the Year.
Right.
I do some other school stuff over there.
Okay.
That's in September, that Prescott High Half Century Club.
Right.
Where they induct in the 50th
anniversary
reunion class and every class before. So last year when I shot it was, 50 years, class of 67?
Right.
I guess,
sounds about right.
It. So the youngest person in the room graduated high school when I was 2 years old.
Not bad.
So I get to feel like a kid in there.
Yeah, heck yeah, man.
When we were out there, it was the crowning of Teacher of the Year and all that stuff for the education department out here. And we got to chat a little bit for a couple minutes. I was watching you work.
Right.
And I kind of got the seed of an idea to sit down and talk with you. Because you are, how old are you?
I'm 21.
21, and how long have you been doing video and photography work?
More video-sided for about a year or so. Photography, recent. I was doing video early on because, phones
early
nowadays.
Early on.
Early, yeah, a year ago. Yeah. I was doing, this was right after I had just gotten out of, I moved here from Chicago last year.
Yeah.
But before that, I was living out in Oregon. I moved out to Oregon to kind of get away from the Chicago noise, I guess. It was a very hectic place to live and try to grow as a person. And so I moved out to Oregon to kind of get away from everything, try to escape. And it didn't go well. After a few months, I ended up losing everything and fell flat on my face. And didn't really have anybody to rely on, not really any family there at the time to support me. But I had an old mentor friend reach out who... he's based out of Chicago. He owns a company out there. It's a medical company. They go and repair medical equipment in Chicago hospitals. And so he reached out to me and told me he would help me get back on my feet, et cetera, et cetera. So I started kind of following him around and seeing what it was like to run a business. And, I learned a ton of stuff that summer. This was just this past summer. And I learned so much about how to operate a business, what to do, how to get clients, the whole nine. But one thing I found fascinating was... video work. I had seen a lot of people who were expanding their business by, doing promotional videos online where they were releasing free content. And I was just bringing awareness to their story. I was bringing awareness to their companies. And I found it very fascinating. I thought I had an interesting story to tell. So I started pretty much going and watching these educational videos and reproducing them myself. I didn't have any editing equipment. I was just using my phone at the time. But I'd record these videos and post them on YouTube, post them on Facebook, etc. And, I mean, the quality was terrible. It was absolutely... I go back and watch these videos now, and they're just absolutely awful. But what I've learned in that time is how to be comfortable in front of a camera, which most people aren't, you know, fond of. It's like public speaking, you know.
Yeah.
There's a funny quote. It's like people are more afraid of... Like, the number one fear people have is public speaking.
Yeah.
Number two is death. So you'd rather be the guy in the casket than the guy giving the
eulogy.
Yeah, exactly. And
now,
so,
the worst is dying on stage.
Yeah, that's a double whammy right there.
I've done that.
A few times. I'm sure I have as well. But, you know, getting in front of that camera was just very intimidating because you're pretty much just talking to yourself, right?
Yeah.
You don't know who's going to see it, what they're going to say, and you're very self-conscious in that way. And you also... There's no, you know, social media in general, it's kind of like this highlight reel for people, right? You can pretty much promote just the good aspects of your life. And you can pretty much make yourself look any way you want. You can do all these great things that, like, really put yourself in this, like, celebrity or celebrity lookalike status. With video, however, if you're just starting out, man, it's you. Like, you got no editing skills.
The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Exactly.
Especially doing it on, like you said, starting out on a phone or even on rudimentary filming, like, straight to YouTube type of things. A lot of those and a lot of the ones that get the most traction aren't the heavily processed, the heavily edited stuff.
Correct.
So it's almost secondary, the technique.
Yep.
Above everything else is the content, the idea, the message, whatever else that you're getting out.
The story is king always, right? And so, you know, going from that, I had started. So when I was growing up, I had a lot of, you know, I didn't have like a.
Let's drop back. We're getting a little ahead of Chicago. That's where you're born.
I was born at northern Chicago in a town called Waukegan, Illinois, about an hour
Who's
north.
Who's the most
of,
famous person from Waukegan?
That's a good question. I know there's a few people out of Waukegan, but there's not anybody that I can.
I know. For old people like me.
Oh, see, yeah.
Jack Benny.
Jack Benny, huh? I'm gonna have to look that up.
Man, that hurts. What do I expect? Somebody who's been in the business for a year.
Yeah, exactly.
This is my 38th year.
Wow.
In media.
I'm almost hitting 40, man. You have more experience than, you know, twice as much experience as my age.
I am the king of don't let this happen to you.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're born in Waukegan. And what was family life for you? How many brothers and sisters? Just you?
I have a few brothers and a younger sister. So I have an older brother. My family's kind of split up all over the country, so I'm not going to dive too deep into that. It's very confusing.
Blended.
Yeah, very blended family. But essentially, my parents divorced when I was really young. I was about three years old. I don't remember the divorce itself, but soon after, I moved out to Alabama, where my dad lives. My half of my family, my dad's side, all lives in Alabama in the southern states. And I moved out there and lived with him for a few years and two of my other brothers. So I have four brothers total.
Oh, wow.
One sister. And they're all younger than me except for one. The one that's older lives out in Alabama. And essentially, we moved out there because my mom couldn't afford to, as a single mother, keep us afloat.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the time, I didn't know what was going on, but she pretty much picked us up. It was like halfway through my year in kindergarten. It was like halfway through.
Oh, so this is halfway fairly through, soon after the divorce, a couple of years.
Yeah, so halfway through my year in kindergarten, my mom came and picked my little brother and I up from school, and she said, and the car's packed up, and I'm like, what's going on? And, you know, I'm so young at the time, I have no idea. And she pretty much just says, like, you know, we're going to go visit our dad for a while. And I didn't know what that meant at the time. You know, just go say hi to dad. And I had seen him for a few years. I'm like, heck yeah, man. I want to go see Pops. And so she drove. He drove. They met halfway. It's about a 12-hour drive
from Illinois to Alabama.
Yeah, so they met halfway, 6 hours both ways.
And that's the deep south.
Yeah, like we were down under, and we were down there, and so I lived with him for a few years, picked up a southern accent, and after a few years of that, during a spring vacation we had off from school, my brother and I went to visit our mom because our dad felt bad. We hadn't seen our mom in a while. So he's like, you know, you're just going to visit. You're not staying there. Don't get any ideas, blah, blah, blah. Because they had this agreement between them, not a court ordered, but just an agreement between them. And it never...
Trying to do what was best for the kids.
Right.
Like,
and it was... it was never really structured well, and so we went up to visit our mom. And, I mean, this gets a little hairy at this point. So we go up to visit her for spring break, and after about a month or so, we're still there. And spring break has well ended at this point. My brother and I both knew this. Well, my dad shows up. He drove all the way up from Alabama to Illinois with some sheriff's deputies from from the local county in Illinois. And pretty much at that point, this was going into third grade, I want to say.
So it's been a couple of years since you've been, 3 years since you've been out of
It's been a few
Illinois.
Years, yeah. And, you know, we've been in Illinois for about a month now. And my dad comes up with the sheriff's deputies, and he's pretty much like, you know, I have the rights to our kids. They're pretty much fighting right there, legal battle, like,
yeah.
You know, right there. And, I mean, we're so young. We have no idea what's going on. And pretty much they told us, like, make a choice. Who do you want to live with? And
at what, eight, nine
yeah,
years old?
I was like 7 or 8, and
oh,
my
man.
Brother was younger. He was like 5, and we're pretty much sitting in this driveway on a summer day, and my dad and the sheriff's deputies are at the end of the driveway. My mom's kind of sitting outside of the house, and they're just like, decide. And we're like 8 years old. We have no idea what the long term repercussions of this are.
Yeah.
We have no idea. And we had just like gotten back with our mom. So after like, and I felt terrible. Like I was sick to my stomach that day. Like I remember it very clearly. I was like sick to my stomach. Cause like, why do I have to decide between, you know, who, like out of my parents who I get to live with? This is so messed up. Why you
what
can't
a
you
horrible
guys
choice to
yeah, and
place
so,
on a kid.
So, you know, we decided to, like, me and my brother were like, we're not splitting up. Like, we looked at each other, we're like, we're ride or die type of deal, you know. And so we decided to stay with our mom and, you know, hugged her dad goodbye, and he had to drive back to Alabama without us. I mean, it was just, like, one of the worst weeks I can recall in my life was, like, that. Because then at that point, I had ended up staying in Illinois and then eventually Wisconsin once we moved for the rest of my...
You moved there with your mom?
Yeah, for the rest of my childhood growing up. And I had gone and visited my dad a few times since then, but it was nothing... Like, I didn't go out and move there. It was just going to visit, you know, here and there.
What part of Alabama was he in?
It's like central Alabama, I want to say. So Birmingham is kind of like right in the middle of Alabama. So it's about an hour or 2 hours north of there in a tiny town called Coleman. And it's like 4,000 people in the whole city or something like that.
I've been in 84, long before you were thought of.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated high school in 84.
Okay.
And I went to visit some family and friends in Mississippi, in Macon, Mississippi. The biggest area close to it was Columbus. I think there was an Air Force base or something.
Okay.
But I did some work. I was out there for like 6 months. And I did some work for the Columbus Post-Dispatch, which I think is now defunct, but it was the main paper there.
Right.
And it was really close to, fairly close, driving distance to the Alabama border. But it was the western, southwestern end of Alabama.
Okay.
Little town of Aliceville.
Aliceville.
Aliceville, Alabama. We went through there, and that was the... there was a legitimate guy named Jefferson Davis Hogg that they based the character J.D. Hogg on the Dukes of Hazzard after.
Okay.
And the guy used to ride around, like, in the county fairs in his white suit and a big convertible caddy.
Yep.
And he was, like, the local alderman or whatever. But that was my – we went into Aliceville and then turned around and came back.
Uh-huh.
But that was
that was the trip.
That was my trip to Alabama.
Nice.
But I tell you, going from, like you said, outside of Chicago.
Right.
I went from the San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay.
To Alabama, Mississippi. You would go to Alabama.
Big,
for me.
Big change.
As a 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid, it was like walking into an episode of Mayberry RFD, man. It was great. It was a great experience.
Right, right.
I went for 6 months one time and then a couple months the following year. And it was just such a culture shock to go from a teeming metro area, the East Bay, you know, outside of Oakland, California, into basically at the time in the 80s was still pretty much a segregated South.
Yeah.
It was very odd for me. But a neat experience.
It was. Yeah. It's. So I've never had a problem with moving because I've moved so much
it
in my
sounds
life.
Sounds like you couldn't have.
Yeah, there were a few times that I bounced around across the states. I've lived in, you know, 10 plus states at this point, and I've traveled to about 30, 40 of them. But the most interesting thing I see is that culture shock all the time. And I mean, most people who don't travel that much and go through something like that, they're so freaked out. They don't know how to act. They don't know like what to say. Do I even speak because I don't have the same accent? That was one of the things I had to deal with when I moved from Alabama up north to Illinois when I was going to school. I used to get made fun of my accent. I couldn't pronounce some words because like my accent was so bad. Like certain words just would not come out correctly.
And those are your formative years, 5, 6, 7.
Super formative. Like I remember those years more than I do like the 8 to 12 range. Like just like those early years while I was moving a lot and my parents. So, you know, fast forward, I guess, going to high school.
Now, where was high school for you?
This was in a city called Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like the third largest city in Wisconsin, about an hour both ways between Milwaukee and Chicago, right on the border of both states and right on Lake Michigan, Lake City. And it's got about 100,000 people there. So a little different than here in Prescott now.
Yeah.
A little metropolis area. But going through that and dealing with all this stuff growing up, I was like, man, I cannot wait to, you know, get out of this area again. You know, it's it was interesting, but it just wasn't for me. Like, it was very one way living. Like, you had to act a certain way, you had to, you know, talk a certain way. But going through that, it really helped me.
That's where you went to high school in Kenosha, was it?
Yeah, right.
What were you doing the arts in high school, or what was your? Did you have any specific focus, or were you just going through high school?
That's a good question. I did a lot in high school. I was kind of a blended kid. It was in middle school first. I had a friend by the name of Cody, and he had been playing guitar since he was about 5 years old. So this dude had 10 years of experience. By the
virtuoso.
Time. Yeah, no, he was killer, and I'd always loved music. But I'd never seen it really played live, like, you know, in person, like up close in person. Yeah. And we had become friends just because we had class together and everything else. And we were just a bunch of goofballs kind of screwing around all the time. And he came over to my house one time and I brought his guitar and he started playing this guitar. And it was the most beautiful thing I had ever heard. And I was so amazed by his technicality and his skill set that he had with this instrument.
Yeah.
And I was just blown away. And at that point, I was like, I want to learn how to do this. So I went and got a guitar. He actually at first let me use, because he had multiple guitars by this point. He let me use some of his until I could save up and get my own. But he taught me how to play guitar while I was in middle school. And I still kind of play today, not nearly as much. But it was kind of my doorway into artistry. And
expressing yourself.
Exactly. Expressing myself through some type of medium. And moving into high school, you know, that was 7th, 8th grade. So moving into high school is like where the cliques got real. Like, you had to actually, like, you know, freshman year.
I'm like, pick a side.
Yeah. Freshman year, I'm like the biggest kid in my grade. I had hit my growth spurt in middle school. So I was like way taller than all the other freshmen and all the upperclassmen. Kind of seen me as like this guy who they could just get like really messed up, but like would allow me to hang out with them.
What were the cliques? What were the groups?
It's the cliche stuff. You know, you got like the jocks, you got the nerds, you got the cool kids, you got the lame kids, the people nobody talks to, the people you want to be friends with in case they go crazy. Yeah, you know, like
okay, what year is this? When did you graduate?
I graduated in 2014.
Oh God!
So it seems like such a long time ago because I was a completely different person. Than, like, I've changed. Night and day, but
it's all relative, man, because to me, obviously, as being an old fogey, that's like yesterday, you know,
right?
But I mean, that's when I started this podcast in 2014.
Wow.
But I remember the difference between 84 and 89.
Yep.
In four or five years,
right?
How much I changed? Well, I didn't really change. I haven't changed much since about 8th grade, as far as my attitudes and my maturity level.
Right.
But just in the scope of what I was doing work wise,
yep.
Between high school and 4 years later, 5 years later,
right?
How much I had changed professionally? It's huge.
So
it's all in how you look at it. It's interesting to hear somebody like yourself talk in those terms, because now I remember how much of a gap that was.
Yeah, it was huge for me. And so going into, I was a total screw up my freshman year. I
Well, where'd you fall in those cliques?
See, this is the interesting thing. I've always been friends with everybody.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird because you kind of get, like, adopted into cliques. You don't necessarily, like, pick and choose. I mean, some people do. Some people try to fit in. They go after a look, a group, whatever. And then there's the people who kind of just act themselves and kind of assimilate into those groups, yeah. You know, naturally. And at first, you know, I was just thinking I was, like, this cool kid because I was, like, the only freshman who was partying with all these upperclassmen, and no freshman ever got to party with the upperclassmen, yeah. And so I'd go to school the next day or the next week. There'd be all these photos online of, like, me just acting ridiculous, or, like, there was one point that I was wearing a dress because I got blacked out drunk, and they were all over, and then I had, like,
Please tell me that's still out there.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well...
It's not on my personal pages. People probably have those... I've had friends, like, this past year send me photos of, like, my freshman year in high school to remind me of how much of a screw-up I was. But pretty much I got blacked out at this one night going to this party, and my friend and I decided it'd be a good idea to go to the party in dresses because it was, like, pretty much all girls at this party. It was, like, a Justin Bieber-themed party. And so, like, I mean, it was great because it was, like, all the really hot chicks in school, but... we got there and, like, all the photos of the night, I was like, oh my God, I messed up. Like, I messed up bad. And so, like, the next month or two at school, all I heard was, like, or people would just come up to me with their phones and show me, like, these photos. And, like, you remember any of this? I was like, honestly, I remember those flashes being, like, those flashes. I don't remember the events of the night.
You know, in retrospect, I had it so much easier because there was no internet. There was no digital photography, no
right.
social media. But... I was the photographer in all 4 years of high school. I was a yearbook photographer, newspaper photographer, working for a local studio. So I was always the kid with the camera. So
right.
I kind of fit into all the groups too. I was always photographing the jocks, so they knew me.
Yep.
The burnout musician band kid, you know, the kids that were in their garage bands.
Yeah.
I knew them.
Right.
I knew the preppies and the is that even a thing anymore?
Yeah, it's still a thing.
I knew the kids who ran student government because they were the ones that I covered for the paper and took
right.
pictures of. Every group that found themselves in a different clique or club in the yearbook, I knew because I was there.
Exactly.
And I was the kid at the party with the camera.
Yeah.
But this was old film and developing days.
Yeah. You're sending the photos into
a
company.
We did them all ourselves.
Oh, okay.
My own stuff. A dark room in the house when I was in eighth grade.
That's awesome.
You know, I was the kid that was developing the pictures of the kids that were blacked out drunk. And if I got to that point, there was nobody there to run the camera.
Yeah,
so.
No, that's a great point.
So I had it very easy. Now, some of my buddies, actually a guy I had on this podcast not that long ago, we were good friends since seventh grade on.
Right.
And we recently, in the last few years, reconnected, Ronnie Pitts. And he was planning a trip out here from the Bay Area, and I started going through these boxes, old pictures and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and finding pictures of him, not
yeah.
of me, but of him and all our other buddies, you know, just passed out,
right.
drunk, bottles of beer laying all over the place.
Geez.
And we started swapping some old memories,
uh-huh.
the few memories that we still have. But yeah, what a fishbowl to grow up in when there is social media, when there's Facebook and Twitter.
You're always on the record, man. It's growing up, it was interesting because when I lived in Alabama, my dad didn't allow us to have any tech. Like, we had video games and stuff, but we didn't get to play them. Like, it was super interesting because, like, the first, like, those developing years you had talked about, those years, I didn't know what a phone, like, an actual phone was. My dad had a pager, so, like, you know, like, that was it. Like, you know, I was still growing up around the pager days. And moving up north, though, my parents tried to, like, spoil us to stay, whether they want to admit to it or not. They pretty much bought us whatever they could get their hands on to make us stay with them. And at the time, you know, it was like the culture shock, but with, like, the digital age, because I grew up at in the beginning part of my life was no tech. And then night and day, as soon as I moved, it was all tech.
So you go from Amish to Times Square in a heartbeat.
Exactly. And so, like, my perspective on it's very interesting because I had to grow up without stuff, and I had to go out into the woods, and, you know, I was a Boy Scout, and I did all the stuff that makes life worth living. And then on the flip side of that, I got to learn all the ins and outs of, like, what sharing content meant and,
yeah.
you know, what it meant to create something that the world could potentially see. And I think that's what keeps me grounded more or less, like the stuff I do now, which is like being really true to myself and knowing myself better than maybe some other people my age or most people my age is like, I just know what I enjoyed doing before. Like I was never completely enveloped into like nonsense or yeah. like a screen. And, you know, nowadays anybody, most people on the road are staring down at their cell phones.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting thing to see because they're the same people who have, like, the road rage or, you know, the same people who are online posting about, like, you know, don't text and drive. But, like, you know.
As they're driving down the road, they're
doing
that.
60 miles per hour down the highway, sending a tweet out about going 60 miles per hour. You know, it's very interesting. It helps me stay grounded for the most part. Like, stuff I do, I know there's a balance between it. And, like, you know, some days I'll shoot. Some days I go out and I'll just relax. I don't bring anything with me. Like, today I left my phone at my house just because I didn't want to be bothered by it. I didn't want to... Like, I'd much rather have a conversation with another human being than, you know, have a phone next to me and always consistently worry about who's going to call me, who's going to text me, did I get an update, how many likes did I get on this photo, that sort of thing. It's definitely necessary for today's day and age. For business specifically, but in the same sense, like you still need to be like a human, you know?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Well, speaking of business and technology, how's that for a segue? This episode is brought to you by Audible.
Audible, yes.
Use the Audible link at milehighshow.com and the code MILEHIGH at checkout for a free 30-day download, or excuse me, I'm an idiot, a free, well, and I won't edit that out, a free audio download and a free 30-day trial. What you can get for that, how about this? This should be the title of my autobiography. It is Don't Do What I Did by Alex Wagner, narrated by the author. It's on his journey as a video production person, since we're going to be talking video with Kyler. Don't Do What I Did, An Honest Guide to Freelancing in Film and Video. It is the ins and outs in a frank way of film and video production, from networking to booking gigs to taking care of yourself. Something I definitely could have benefited from. But again, that should be the title. We should scrap Mile High Show and just name this podcast Don't Do What I Did. How about this one? You can get it for free. How to Shoot Video That Doesn't Suck.
That's
by
a good
Steve
one.
Stockman.
Yep.
I think the title sums it up.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check those out. I like Audible. I use it a lot.
Well, you can, as a new customer, get a free audio download and a free 30-day trial by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. 180,000-plus titles. They are adding content.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
It is. Adding content daily. Everything from comedy routines, original comedy content, to books, magazines, lectures. Everything that you can think of audio is available at Audible, and you can get a free audio download by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. Okay, so what brought you to the Pacific Northwest?
So
what was the
I mentioned before,
there?
I grew up in Alabama, right?
Yeah.
And I lived in the South, traveled around the South a lot. And even in high school, I went on a few trips with my buddies to the southern states, Florida, California, that sort of thing. And
just hitting the road?
Yeah, just hitting the road, not really knowing what to expect, just kind of going out and just living. And, man, do I miss those days. It's definitely hard not to reminisce too much about them because it, you know, prevents you from going out and doing it again. But in doing so, what I learned is I hate the Midwest, like, weather. Like, specifically, like, I just cannot stand, like, 90% of, like, the year is, like, either cold or rainy or cloudy. One of the three, like 90% of the year. And then 10%, you get sun, and then it's just like blistering hot for those 10% of the year. I was like, you know what? As soon as I'm old enough to kind of grow, like do my own thing, I'm going back to warm weather. I don't know where that's going to be yet. Before I had moved from Chicago, I was kind of looking at California and Texas just because I kind of knew people out there.
Yeah.
But Prescott, Arizona wasn't really on my mind up until like pretty much last minute, and that was the choice I ended up going with because I have family out here.
But you ended up, where'd you say, Portland?
I was living, so I went to Portland on my first trip. I took a road trip with a buddy out to Portland from Chicago, And I went to another place called Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah.
And so I went out and traveled to those spots, and I was like, this place is beautiful. It's what, right on the West Coast. California's close. You know, I know people out here. And it was like, I mean, if you've never been to Oregon, like the mountainous regions specifically, it doesn't even look real. It's not even realistic how beautiful. There's waterfalls everywhere. There's mountains and landscapes. And pretty much going out there, I was like, I'm going to try to move out here. And so when I got back from the trip, I packed up my stuff and I left. Didn't really know what the hell I was doing.
Now, had you been working at that point, or was this fresh out of school?
This was about a year or two out of school, and I'd kind of saved up a little bit of money, not anything, you know, even responsible enough to go and do something like that, but I just felt like I needed to move. Like, I just had there was a lot of, like, drug problems going on through the places I had lived, and I had a lot of friends kind of passing away at a very early age, and after, like, I want to say, like, the fifth funeral I went to, I was like, I can't keep doing this. And
did you fall into the trap?
No. That's good. You know, I had some very close friends who, you know, early on were kind of... See, this is the interesting thing most people don't get about... I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but...
That's the other name for this podcast.
Yeah.
Tangents.
Yeah. essentially, what ended up happening, what I witnessed go down when I was going through school was... Kids were like really depressed, or they were trying to make their parents proud. One of the two,
one extreme or the other.
Right. I think, you know, social media had a part in that because everybody's playing their highlight reels, and so people that are always on social media are realizing or comparing their lives to this highlight reel that isn't realistic.
Yeah.
And in doing so, it made them really depressed. I actually went through a stage of depression in middle school, very dark time for me. But I ended up getting through it. I think it was part of, like, puberty and growing up and just not understanding the world.
A combo of
it was kind of a mix of things. But, you know, getting into high school and people not fitting in, and then everybody seeing these highlight reels, and there was just a lot of, like, weird stuff that goes on in high school. I mean, once you go through it, and you're just like, you look back, you're like, well, I mean, some people have a normal, like, high school, you know, like, they go through and just get their 4 years done. But some people see a lot of stuff. And I was one of those people that saw a lot of things, and a few of my friends were as well. And, you know, with parent divorces and couch hopping, I mean, once you get into high school, things get weird for a lot of people. Like, parents who stay together up until that point end up...
For the kids.
For the kids end up leaving each other. I mean, it's a whole slew of problems. But, like, out of that, depression and trying to make them proud, trying to get the parents to reconnect because, you know, maybe if the kid's doing well, then it's a reason for them to stay together.
Yeah.
So out of that, you know, all these parents are prescribed prescription medication, whether that be Adderall for attention or depression pills because they're having a midlife crisis. What ends up happening is those kids start testing these drugs out, and they don't know what they're getting into.
That was a common pastime when I was in school.
Right.
You're at a buddy's house, you go through the medicine cabinet,
exactly.
See what's there.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think it was common for a lot more people than they want to admit.
Oh, yeah.
But it was pretty much this epidemic that, I mean, that was the first stage of it. Nobody ever recognizes it. But essentially, what ended up happening the few years I was going through school is the government, from what I know, ended up started taxing and restricting those pills because of all the overdoses people were having. It was kind of like a hedge against that. So the prices went up. You know, the school market, the school black market started. The prices started going up like 4, 5, 10 times as much as what it used to cost to get your pills. And out of that, drugs, you know, the hardcore stuff started giving the same type of feeling for a quarter of the cost.
If people want something, they're going to get it. You raise the prices, that just means you're either going to use an alternate.
Exactly.
Or you're going to find a way to get the money to get it, which the crime end of it.
Yeah.
So it's going to happen either way. There's not a whole lot of other than education and, like you say, witnessing some things you'd rather forget.
Right.
There's not a very viable way to block that.
It's very, especially when you're younger and you don't have a full understanding of, like, even yourself, you know, like, who you are as a person, what you believe in, your morals, all those things. When you're young and you kind of just going with the flow. I mean, I was caught up with certain things for a little while. I was smoking all the time. And, but, like, that was the extent of it. Right. And I very quickly realized within like a year or so that I'd ask myself one question, and it was, where do I, not only I, but my five closest friends end up 5 years from now?
Yeah.
And I was like, half of them are going to be dead, and the other half are going to either be in jail or on their way. And I was like, that includes me. Whether or not I want to accept that right now, that definitely includes me. And so at that point, I started kind of shying away from the hardcore groups, I guess you would call them.
Yeah.
Where they were just slamming stuff every single day. Like, if a normal person took it without a tolerance, they would die. And, I mean, it was really messed up, like, watching this unfold. And then, so everybody got switched over to, then there was a heroin epidemic that went through the Midwest, and it's still going on.
Yeah.
But during the time I was, like, the first year out of high school, there was, like, on the news every single day, somebody my age had passed away from an overdose.
Yeah.
And it was because of the prescription prices going up, and then, you know, heroin being a cheaper option, or all the other drugs that are out there being a cheaper option compared to the prescriptions. And, you know, after like 2 years later, you know, a year later, it was like, I can't continue. That was the one I decided to move out to Oregon.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to get away from this, you know, once and for all. I'm going to start my life over because my life's a wreck right now. I'm not doing anything. I was waking up, like, I was starting to get depressed again because I was waking up every day without a purpose. I didn't have anything going on. I kind of, you know, slid through jobs here and there to kind of keep myself afloat, but it was nothing substantial. And what I had in my head versus what I was doing every day was so different that it was like the conflict of interest in that made me even more depressed. So moving away and telling myself once I'm away,
fresh start,
no influences, no reason to do anything, would be a great way for me to start living what I'm thinking in my head every day. And so I did, and after a few months, it's interesting when you move somewhere new and you don't know anybody, and you realize like how important like referrals are, how important people you know are.
Were you doing when you got out there? What was work?
So when I first moved out there, so in Oregon, weed is legal, like really legal. I mean, like there's some aspects of it that are illegal, but people go out there just to grow, knowing like they won't get caught. There's like laws that, and, you know, you can grow up to like 100 plants at a time without getting a federal like induced ticket. So the FBI is not kicking your door down until, and like they have helicopter flyovers, like there's signs. So you have like a speeding sign on the side, or like a speed limit sign on the side of the road here. There's signs out there where I was living that said flyovers, you know, constant flyovers. There's always like, there's planes flying over to make sure you're not transporting or building something out in the middle of the woods. And so that didn't really help me get away from anything, and just kind of limited what I could do. And so I ended up working. I got hired at a bong shop, like a glass making shop up in the mountains. And I was their marketing guy. That was the first time I ever got into like a marketing job. I was selling their stuff on their. They would make their glass in house. They didn't outsource to China or anything like that. They actually blew their own glass, and they would sell it because, I mean, other than weed, like there's all the
secondary market.
Yeah, there's all the other stuff, and you know they can just sell it as tobacco pipes. So I would do all their invoices, their online stuff, their in store stuff. But they were stoners. The business owners were complete stoners. They would get stoned in the back of their office during the day. And very shortly after, I got fired because I didn't open up the store one time. They didn't mention it to me, but they'd assumed that I was supposed to be there, and so I got fired. But after that, I was like, okay. That was when I started running out of funds. I went to a party at one point after that, got robbed of everything.
Oh, man.
And since I had just moved out there, I had like my birth certificate, my social security card, all my info.
Yeah.
And that all went with my, when I got robbed, everything. I had no ID, no way to identify myself. And so I couldn't get a job because I had no like proven, like I was pretty much illegal at that point.
Now, what did your ID get taken? Did somebody,
it was in my
startup, so another, Kyler Austin running around?
Yeah, no. So I didn't have an ID for like, you know, up until I moved back to Chicago. And what ended up happening, I had to go back to the hospital I was born at to have them print me off another birth certificate.
Yeah.
And then from there, I had to go to the government office, get IDs, et cetera, et cetera. But
nobody used your ID to get...
No. Oh, okay. Actually, somebody found it like 2 or 3 months later.
Gotcha.
Like tossed up without, you know...
So they were after whatever, and they got that by a byproduct.
Yeah, and so whoever found it sent it back to me in Chicago.
How'd you get robbed? I mean, we just... Somebody grabbed your backpack, or
I was
broke
at
your
a,
car or what?
I went to a party in town. So I was living up at the mountains. So I went down to the valley, the city of Eugene, Oregon. And there was like in Oregon, they party for like, have you ever seen the movie Project X?
No.
And so pretty much that movie is like, it's like the most epic party ever. And it's not even realistic how like ridiculous the movie is, but I moved out to Oregon, like the parties would go on for 2 or 3 days straight. It would be from Friday till Sunday, no sleep in between, just got slammed, whatever. So I went to one of these, and I left my coat at this chick's house that I thought would be like responsible enough to keep my coat there. And, you know, I'm still growing up. I'm still learning. And so I came back the next day, and I was super dehydrated. I was like, I'm going to the store. I'm getting some water. Like, I'm just going to go buy a bunch of water. I'm just going to sit here and like nurse this hangover. Yeah. And I get to the store, and I go to pull my wallet out, and it's not there. I'm like, crap. Like, this isn't good. I'm in Oregon. I don't have my wallet. I was like, okay, maybe I dropped it on the way here. It was like a 5-block walk or something like that. So I ended up walking the whole path back and forth about 5 times. Didn't find it. Got back to the place. Looked. Flipped,
still don't have your water.
Flipped everything. So I'm still dying of dehydration. I don't know. I don't want to go broke first or die of dehydration. But couldn't find it. Eventually gave up on it because I just assumed it was gone. Like I was like, there's no way I missed. Like I had it in my coat. That night, left my coat at the place. Didn't touch it until the next morning. Put it on. Went to the store.
Yeah.
And in that time, it disappeared, and I pretty much lost everything with that. You know, came back to my buddy's house, living up in the mountains with, and he's like, "Yeah, man, if you can't afford to stay here, I don't know what to tell you." And I was like,
"But I got this birth certificate. I'll sell you."
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And he's like, "If you can't afford to, you know, live, you can't afford your food or everything else, you know, I can't continue to allow you to live with me." And I was like, "Okay." So then I decided to move back to Eugene, and I still had nothing. And I tried to move in with the girl who, so she wasn't. It was just her property.
Yeah.
She wasn't the one that ended up taking the stuff. I'm pretty sure there was a friend of hers that was over that was really messed up, and I didn't realize, like, it didn't all connect until afterward.
Yeah, it starts gelling after you get some water in you.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, crap, I'm not drunk anymore, and I'm broke. Like, and so I try to move back in with her, and she's living at this, like, bungalow in the city with a few of her friends, and it's a girls-only house. I didn't know this at the time, so I pretty much packed all my stuff.
You know, you could have had those pictures from high school of you in a dress and just fit right in.
It's common out there, cross-dressing in Oregon, man, if you want to go do that. It's definitely a common theme, but...
Another one?
Yeah, I'll take one more.
Just one. Yeah.
So I tried to move back in with her, and then after like a week, she's like, "Yeah, my roommates don't want you living here." And I was like, "Well, I don't have anything. Like, I was hoping to get on my feet here." And she had kind of given me the okay beforehand. It wasn't just like a, you know, jump into her house,
show up, and leave.
Yeah. And so I was like, "But you kind of let me," and she did not care. Like, when I was the people I knew in Oregon, they just did not. I don't know if this is like common in Oregon, but people are like, it's
well,
like,
plus you didn't have the roots there, so these were fairly new associates, right?
Yeah. I didn't, yeah, no roots, and everybody that I knew there had been like born there or grew up there, and so they did not care about me whatsoever. Yeah. And
you're
this
like outsider, come
right. And they were very friendly when I had money and I was doing well and everything else, but as soon as like
that happens a lot.
It's interesting. And so, you know, I at that point, she's like, "You got to hit the road, Jack." And, you know, I was like, okay. So, you know, for like a week or so, I'm like sleeping under a bridge with these homeless people. And it
oh
was
my
just,
goodness.
It
dude, was, you weren't lying when you said you hit rock bottom.
No. I'd seen the bottom of the barrel. You know, I was like sharing cardboard with like other homeless. It was crazy. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
But, yeah, after about a week or so, they had like a homeless shelter, but you had to give in all your stuff you owned to stay at the homeless shelter. You had to get rid of all your stuff, drop all your baggage. And I was like, this isn't the end for me, and I'm not starting from here. Like, this is going to be my starting point. I'm not losing all my stuff over it.
You just need a life raft for a couple of days.
Just need a life raft. So I would go, and they would serve food during the day, but if you wanted to sleep there, you had to put all your, you had to give them all your stuff. And I wasn't willing to do that, so I chose to sleep under the bridge. And the interesting thing about the bridge is because in Oregon, it's raining all the time.
Yeah.
So you stay away from the rain, and you're hoping at least like the wind is blowing against the bridge and not into the bridge when you're sleeping there, because it was like 50-60 degrees, no sleeping bag. I'm just trying to sleep under like nothing. I mean, I'm like,
I've never interviewed a troll before.
Yeah, no, it was hardcore. And after about a week, I was splitting my time between there was a library in town, and you know, you can be homeless and go into a library.
Yeah,
there's no judgment.
It's
there.
Warm. You're reading. You got stuff to do.
Exactly. And this is where I started like flipping the switch. So every other day because it was a 10-mile trek each way with all my stuff, especially. I was like,
what's all your stuff? What'd you have?
I had like 2 or 3 bags of clothes, and then I had a guitar, and then I had like just some personal stuff, like personal belongings, and I wasn't willing to get rid of that. Like, yeah. I had already dropped about 90% of my stuff, like all my clothes. I mean, most of my stuff got trashed when that happened. But there was like a few things. I was like, I'm not getting rid of this stuff because I don't think this is like the end for me. I was like, there's no way. Like, yeah, I screwed up. Like, I screwed up big, but this isn't it. And so I couldn't hike both ways each day to get food and then go to the library. So I would get food one day, pack up like enough food for the next day, then go to the library and switch that every single day. And I did that for about a week, and I'd go to the library to get on the computer, and they'd only let you like on for 15 20 minutes at a time, and that was it for the day. And so I like tried to I was like squeezing out every ounce of computer time as I could. I was looking for jobs online. I was trying to connect with family and friends. I was like, hey man, can you help
find
me
out? Your way out?
And I put a post out there on Facebook, actually, and I had the old mentor friend of mine that eventually reached out to me. He's very, what's the word? He's a very humble guy, and he won't like call you out on anything, if that makes sense. So he's seen my post, didn't mention it, contacts me. He goes, hey, are you still, looking to help me build this thing in my backyard? Very nonchalant, kind of indirect. Get a conversation going. I was like, yeah, actually, I screwed, because I made a deal with him a few months before all this happened that I was going to help him build something in his backyard. And I was like, yeah, no, I kind of really screwed up big time. And he's like, what do you mean? I told him, even though I had already just posted about it and just like re-verify or whatever, told him what happened, told him what was going down. He's like, do you have any money on you? I was like, not really. I have like $5 and I've been saving it because I thought this was going to just like do something for me.
Yeah.
And it eventually did. I saved the $5 I had. I don't remember where I got it from, but I just kept it on me. And he's like, how can I send you money? How can I get you back home? So he bought me a Greyhound bus ticket. It was a 3-day trek. And
you can get on a bus without ID.
Exactly. You take a Greyhound up until...
Yeah, because you weren't getting on a plane.
No, there's no way to fly me back, right? And he was like, can you get to Walmart? I can send you some money. And I was like, yeah, I know. Walmart was like 20 miles outside of town. And at least where I was. And so that $5, I hopped on one of like the city buses, and it literally cost me the whole $5 to get to Walmart.
Man. And Western Union.
Yeah. And well, he sent me money through Walmart, and it was like a couple $100. He's like, stock up on food. I went and bought a phone at Walmart so I can get in contact with him again.
Yeah, a little burner.
So I called him, and I was like, I'm at Walmart. I'm like, it was the craziest like experience when like somebody's paying for you to live.
Yeah.
Like in that sense. And he's like, get some food in you. I'll have a Greyhound bus ticket waiting for you at the Greyhound station. You don't have to do anything. It's already ordered for you. And so I grabbed a ton of food. Like, I mean, ate more that day. I probably got sick.
Whatever you could fit in your bags and your stomach.
Yeah, that would make it on the bus trip. And so I took that city bus back to the Greyhound station. And then for like, it was like 15 different Greyhound buses I had to pack and unload because of all the stops. I had stopped in like Denver, and I mean, I stopped in like every major city on the way back to Chicago, and it was a 3-day trip back on buses with all my belongings in this bus, and I was packing it under. And at one point, so I had a phone that didn't work that I was using for like music and stuff because it just didn't have service.
Like an MP3 player kind of thing?
Yeah, charge it when I could. If I had tunes, it was like a godsend. And then I had the burner phone. Well, on one of the buses, I was unpacking my stuff and I was setting it down like across the street for the next, because the next bus stop was kind of down the road, and the bus left. My phone was still charged, like my burner phone, the phone that worked, was still charging on the bus because it was like outlets inside the bus.
Yeah.
And the bus just left. And so I ended up borrowing somebody's phone, calling Greyhound. They're like, sorry, there's nothing we can do about it, blah, blah, blah. Lost my burner for like, and I was like halfway through the trip. And so I could no longer contact the guy who was like, staying in touch with me.
Your benefactor.
Yeah, exactly. And I finally got back to Chicago with most of my stuff. Lost a phone out of the deal. But I don't remember how I ended up getting in contact with him. I don't know if I went and just bought another burner phone when I got back into town or whatever. Maybe I borrowed somebody's phone when I got back, but he came and picked me up from like the bus station, and that was like the very beginning of like changing my life around. And like those few months following that, I would spend like 12 plus hours a day teaching myself something, like regarding, you know, technical skills, just stuff online, how I could make money online, that sort of thing. Because I was like done playing the games. I didn't want to ever wind up in that position again.
And done, it sounds like hunting a job as opposed to creating one.
Exactly. My mindset completely changed on like how, like my view of the world changed when I started living with this guy. It was like, it's one thing to have a mentor, right? A business owner who's maybe 10 years, 20 years ahead of you, who can kind of show you the ropes.
Yeah.
It's another thing to live with those people. Imagine living with somebody who's like just running it, right, business wise for 3 months straight, just living with them. You see their day-to-day activities, their routines. You start adopting their styles, you start adopting their mindset, because they're obviously beneficial mindsets to have. They're doing well, you know, in the term of financial success, they have it. So you want to mimic them as much as possible. And at that point I was like, man, No holds. Like I started spending every dime I had on like new learning material. Like I'd go and buy audiobooks. I'd go buy books in general. I mean, I had no money, and I had like $50-$100 at a time I'd get from, you know, working for him or something.
Yeah.
I'd go and buy a book or something. And I started
something
seeing it,
lasting.
I started seeing them as investments back into myself. Yeah. Like I'm gonna start building myself up as a person, opposed to going and looking for a job where I know that I'm not like this rat who's just turning a wheel all day. I can actually do something in the world. And it's been a journey ever since. I mean, like, I still have that mindset. I mean, even I'll admit, even then I was much hungrier than I am now, which kind of sucks because I like getting comfortable with.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been why I started this new business, is because I started getting comfortable again.
Well, and you started that here when you got to Prescott.
Correct.
What brought you here? Why'd you choose Prescott? Well, did you have a connection here already?
I didn't know anybody other than I had a few family members out here. And before I moved out here, I'd reached out to them saying, hey, do you guys know anybody who could hook me up with a job when I moved out there? It's type of a hedge for me to when I first moved out here.
Yeah.
And nothing. Didn't have anybody, nothing. You know, my brother was allowing me to move in with him when I first got here, and I had saved up some money working the past summer. I was like, okay, so I have like X amount of time to figure out what I'm doing. And I was like, I guess I'll just find a job once I'm out there. And I was calling companies here before I moved here, asking about availabilities and if I can talk
to have an anchor once you got
exactly
it.
And I still wasn't like 100% confident in selling my services, my marketing services at the time, over the phone or like through businesses, because I wasn't there. So like they wanted to like, oh, let's have a meeting. I'm not going to be there for another 2 weeks. They're like, what do you mean you don't live here? And so I didn't want to set that up and like lose a good deal down the road. So I was consulting for, so I moved out here, and I was like, screw it, you know, I'm gonna figure this out. And so I was living with my brother and sleeping on his couch. It was good times, about a month or so of that. And I was like promoting all my services online, just like through free mediums. Couldn't afford to do any actual promotion, and I was getting people, business owners, to contact me and have me schedule a consulting with them, but just consulting online, how can I improve my business online, that sort of thing. And so that kind of helped me, because I was charging like an astronomical rate for what I was actually providing, and I thought I was providing good service, but I was shocked people were willing to pay me like how much I was charging. Like that was such a, because I told you like I was investing in myself, and like one of the things I had learned was like price is a myth if you're providing a solution to somebody's like pain point, like a very powerful pain point and a very powerful solution. You can get paid very well.
You set the value of what you're giving them.
Exactly. And
they have to determine whether it's going to be worth it or not.
Right. How much are they willing to invest back into themselves at that point? And that was a new concept for me, and I didn't believe it fully. I'd read about it, and I was kind of just like playing along with it. So I set my prices, and people like, when I would have a, so people would call me usually, and they would call me about my services, and I wouldn't sell anything. And I think this is a point most people get wrong, even like business people now, as I didn't sell anything. I would just ask them a series of questions. You know, what problems are you having online? What type of audience do you have? What's your niche? That's like really kind of honing in on where they're having problems. And then I would provide a solution.
Well, and that's one of the keys, especially in sort of an abstract thing, which social media promotion is.
It's exactly,
you're creating the audience that's already there, but you're creating the content for them.
Right.
So one solution doesn't fit everybody. Exactly. You're not selling a widget that's going to do
fix
this
all
thing.
Right.
So by feeling them out, by basically interviewing the interviewee, you're finding out what they need, and then you can customize a plan of action for them.
Exactly. And that's a good point you bring up about customizing, because I realized how much – so when I started teaching myself like social media and marketing online, I was like, oh my goodness, there is so much out there to learn. Where do I even begin? And it was so intimidating, I didn't even want to start. But I found this cool little trick, I guess you could call it, which was you have the phone call, you set the meeting, the service, the consulting, whatever, a week or two from that day. During that phone call, you need to extract as much information as you can from that person, and that is what you do homework on for the next week or 2 weeks. And at that point, you don't have to learn what you don't need to learn. You can just learn as you go. And that was hugely beneficial for me in the early days, because I had no idea where to begin. You think you have, you think you're providing one service or solution when people really need this other thing. And if I were to spend all this time trying to like learn this one thing and they needed another, it would have been completely backwards. It wouldn't have benefited me in any way.
A big aspect of that is teaching them what they need.
Exactly.
Because as a business owner, I may think I know what I need to succeed, but in reality, I'm more often than not, you're looking at like businesses saying, well, I want to do what they're doing, or I want to accomplish what they're doing.
Right.
That's not always the case.
Exactly.
That's where that extra set of eyes, that outside party like yourself, a consultant, can look at the whole picture and go, okay, you're going to B. You really need to get A settled first. Or sometimes it's no, A, B, C isn't where you want to be. Let's go to E.
Yeah.
And there's when you're too close to it, you can't always do that. I do a lot of consulting myself, and that's one of the toughest things that I try and do. Is to actually try and explain to a customer, to demonstrate to a customer that what their goal is, well, not goal, because you know the goals are good to have, but their pathway isn't always the best way to get there.
Exactly.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah.
A lot of times they're looking at it from a real tunnel vision thing, and you got to show, okay, here's the big picture.
Let's take a step back.
There are other ways to get there that won't cost you too much, or that maybe cost you financially a little bit, but in the big picture, the long run, you're going to benefit a lot more. And to do that is tough sometimes, because business owners, they often get locked into an idea or a path.
Fantasize about it.
Yeah, and a lot of times that's why the businesses fail.
Exactly. Now, that's a very good point. And being open-minded for me personally has been one of the biggest indicators, I guess, of my success so far, and being that I've had to constantly adapt and pivot what I'm doing, even just day-to-day, because things, especially in the online sphere, it changes every single day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's it's interesting because I had heard a story that, you know, colleges are losing like copious amounts of money right now because everybody's just teaching themselves stuff. Yeah. Everybody's starting to work online. I mean, not everybody, but like it's a trend.
Yeah, and there's that whole other avenue that didn't exist when I was a kid.
There's a very large market for independent contractors now. I think it's a third of all business owners in America today are just independent contractors for their companies.
Yeah.
And
And that education you can get in other areas. It's just,
there's so
it's
much
like
open
media.
Source.
It's like content.
Yeah.
You used to have to get it only from TV,
exactly.
Only from print media, and only from the radio. Now there's thousands of different ways. You know, podcasts. There's thousands of different ways you can get information.
Yeah.
Before, if you wanted an education, you had to go to college. You had to go to secondary education.
Yep.
That wasn't for everybody. I went to college several times.
Right.
Didn't get any on me. But I ended up teaching. I never got my degree. I ended up teaching for 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, do I want to dedicate 4 years of my life to get a piece of paper so that I can get the job I'm already doing?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's been
something I had to wrestle with.
That's, and I've gone through the same thing. But it's so interesting now because I see online specifically advertisements from colleges about teaching social media. And it's like they're trying to get their slice of the pie because they're just financial institutions at this point.
Yeah.
You know, early on it was required to kind of go through, you know, early history in the U.S.
They had a lock on the market.
It was a monopoly. I mean, it still kind of is, but I think within the next few generations, I don't think it's going to be the main route.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a lot smaller class focused.
Don't get me wrong. If I'm going in for surgery, I don't want the guy to...
Doctors, engineers, yeah, there's a very specific few that absolutely require...
I don't want the guy cutting me open or the guy designing the bridge.
I saw this YouTube video.
But for a lot of, especially creative and marketing type of things, it's knowing what's out there, knowing the market.
100%.
And knowing... honing your art as opposed to teaching. Now, having said that, yeah, there's things you need to learn, but there's different ways you can get that knowledge. So what? Let's cut to it. What is it that you're offering? What is it that you offer your clients?
So
where do you steer them?
I'm still in the process of building out, but what my main focus I want to be on is video content. I know it's taking over the online sphere. That along with podcasts and videos are like these two dynamite. I mean, things are moving so fast, I don't think people realize it. I think it's kind of like a motion blur for most people. They don't see it because it's moving so fast.
Yeah.
But if you just slow it down and give it some context, like 3 years, 5 years, 10 years ago, where we were compared to what's happening day to day now, you can get so much attention online just by having good content out there.
Yeah.
Content that makes people talk
and grabbing the listener, the viewer, the audience,
right,
needs to be grabbed quick and held on. The days of build up your marketing strategy are long gone.
No, it's a day in and day out battle, and that's what I love so much about it, which is why I think most people kind of stay away from it, is because it's a day in day out. Like, you can't, you know, rely on yesterday's wins for like the next month. Like, you literally have to go find another win like the next week to continue. Like, you have to constantly be improving your craft. You have to constantly be looking over the numbers. But specifically, I want to start creating content diving deep on certain public figures, personalities, certain brands in the area, and building a substantial non-template version of the content, because what's happening right now is there's so much free money going around, right? It's so easy to get loans. People are throwing money at anything and they hope something will stick.
They're not throwing it at me.
Well, yeah, me neither. And I think it's just because, you know, we're playing a different game, but pretty much everybody's an expert now.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what the hell they're doing, and everybody's either losing or making money. What I want to change in that sphere, especially with social media, everybody's an expert. I don't claim to be one. I'm just really good at a few things. And I focus on those things, and I want to build something around that. And in doing so, I think I can kind of cut out the cheap China version of what is being sold to people right now for twice as much, four times, five times as much, for a quarter of the quality. And in doing that, I think that's going to help people stand out in the long term when, you know, the markets do slide again, the markets do crash again. The B, C, and D players, you know, it was like the real estate market in 08, where people who weren't fully committed to their businesses all got wiped out. The people were still doing deals in real estate in 08 and 09. It was a very select few people. Those were the A players who were crushing it before and are still crushing it today. The people I've talked to in the real estate industry who survived that and still were selling houses each month. Like, there were a few people I know that still sold. They didn't miss a month during those years. And the reason being is because they had a very solid business around what they were doing. They were committed 100%.
They built that foundation and then were able to ride it out, as opposed to in the 99, 2000, 01, 02, 03, where people were jumping on the bandwagon without the foundation.
And it's starting. I'm seeing it again in real estate and also in the marketing sphere. So real estate's really bad right now because it's doing so well. Everybody wants to be a real estate agent. I know a few people who started and within a month had their first deal, and it was like a $400,000 or $500,000 property within a first. Like, that's unheard of most of the time. The first 3 months, you normally don't get a deal in real estate when you're starting out new. But the market is so hot right now, and there's so little inventory that it's just like everything's flipping like hotcakes. And I think it's great now. Great, make your buck now. But most people are either spending it, or they're just not reinvesting it into their business. where
again, it goes back to they don't have the foundation to know what they're doing.
They don't understand the cash flow. They don't understand what a hard market is, you know. And so, in doing the stuff I'm doing, I want to build those foundations for people that they're not getting a template version. They're not getting a template version of a real estate agent. And the same aspect, they're not going to get a template version of a video content creator or just a content yeah. creator in general that's going to get your stuff out there and it's going to get it seen. And you're going to be known as a person of expertise in your field, whatever that may be. I think most of the companies that are providing services that I provide, they go and sell these templates to people, selling a one solution fits all. And
yeah.
when things get tough, nobody's going to care about those people that are getting that work done. They're going to think about the people who stand out, you know, and I'm looking to make work that stands out yeah. Across the crowd.
Well, nice. Well, how can folks reach out to you? Run through your social media, your Instagram, Twitter, okay. Facebook,
so
all that good stuff.
You guys can find me at Kyler Austin.
Spell that, please.
Yeah, KYLERAUSTON. Not IN, not like Austin, Texas, ON. And most of my social media is at that, or you can just quick Google search me and you'll find me. I'm currently building out a website. It's not completed yet. It's still in maintenance stage, but that will be up shortly at KylerAustin.com as well. So,
All right,
Matt.
Now, we intentionally skipped over some stuff specifically on the video and photo end because I'm hoping this is part one of something we'll get with friend
sure.
of the show Matt Hinshaw soon, and the three of us sit down and just talk shop. So now we
yep.
got your history out of the way. Very interesting story.
Thank you.
You've crammed a lot into 21 years, my friend.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to soon sitting down with you and with Matt Hinshaw, and we'll talk some shop, talk some pictures. You both have the in on real estate, and I know a little bit about real estate. I know how to lose a house. Got that done in 2009.
Oh, geez.
Again, what was the name of that book on Audible?
Oh, you're going to have to
Don't Let This Happen to You or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, don't let, yeah.
So again, Austin, or Kyler, thank you for seeing. I'm going to flip-flop your names. Kyler, thanks for making time to sit with us. Thanks to the folks at Far From Folsom for letting us take up space. And don't forget, support the show at milehighshow.com. There is a tab called Support the Show with links to our iTunes reviews. Those don't cost you a dime. Jump on iTunes, give us a rating and a review. Use that Amazon link to do your online shop, and we get a little taste at the end of the month. And go to Audible and get yourself a free download and a free 30-day subscription. Kyler, you got a pet?
I got a what?
Do you got a pet?
A pet?
Yeah, cat?
I got a dog.
You got a dog?
I got a Siberian Husky
puppy.
Well,
you know what you should do?
What?
Go to milehighshow.com and click that BarkBox link.
Okay.
And you can get free stuff for your pet because happy pets make happy homes. Thanks,
yes.
Kyler. All right, that's
Thank
it
you.
For Mile High Show 139.